This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman. Howard Wilkinson is off today. Jeffrey Blackwell marked his first 300 days as Cincinnati Police Chief earlier this month by highlighting his goals of reducing crime, increasing officer visibility, making greater use of technology, and more actively engaging youth. While the chief was reflecting on his time leading the force, the city of Ferguson, Missouri was undergoing violence in the streets that was sadly familiar to Cincinnati residents who were here in 2001. I'll talk with Chief Blackwell about policing in Cincinnati and his thoughts on what's been taking place in Ferguson. I'm also joined by community activist Iris Rowley and attorney Al Gerhardstein, who were both involved in the creation of the Cincinnati Collaborative Agreement that came out of the unrest seen here in 2001. You can join our conversation. The number is 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. And for our listeners, the guests know this, we're going to start off talking about Chief Blackwell's upcoming one-year anniversary. We're going to begin the program with that, and then we'll transition into what's been taking place in Ferguson, Missouri, and reflecting back on what happened here in 2001. So if you don't hear Al and Iris right here at the beginning of the program, that's why. So, Chief Blackwell, you're soon going to be, I guess you're now about, what, 316 days into your term as Cincinnati Police Chief. Right. Let's say you were like the mayor and he has to give a yearly State of the City address.
Right.
You're police chief. Give us a state of the Cincinnati Police Department right now.
Well, I think we're doing well. I really do. I think first and foremost, crime is down. And I know a lot of people want to focus when they look at a police department, especially a major city department, they want to look at crime. And I get that. I understand that those numbers are important. So felony crime is down 15%. Shootings are down 20%. Property crime is down 7%. Homicides are just a little bit down, but they are down. So across the board, Cincinnati is continuing a very positive trend going downward in the crime categories. I'm very proud of that, to have continued what Chief James Craig started and the great men and women of Cincinnati PD. Aside from that, I think we have one of the most robust community engagement and youth engagement platforms of any city in the United States, and it's just getting going. So we're 11 months in. Hopefully we'll get 4 or 5 more years to just make it the best so that my dream of Cincinnati being the safest big city in America is true.
Well, I know former Chief Craig had started this. I believe at one time there used to be 5 or 6 assistant police chiefs. There was the chief and then 5 or 6 assistants, and I know he downsized that. And I think you have continued that trend, that there's the top command staff is not the same number as it was maybe a decade ago.
Right. We still hold 3 assistant chiefs, 12 captains, and about 40 lieutenants. One of the things I did notice when I got here is we were a little top-heavy. And with strained resources, both manpower-wise and equipment and technology, you know, we had to take a hard look at everything. So we looked at every position within the department. We found out, you know, what we could do without and what we needed to do better. And one of the things that I focused on was those core services that you provide to people in the community. We had somehow gotten away from some of those things in our effort to fight crime. You know, crime is 0.5%. We spend 99% of our time and energy on that 0.5%. We needed to revert that back to spending time on people in our city and in our community, engaging them, and deal with the criminals appropriately.
You point that the number of serious crimes, that number is down.
But, correct.
It still seems like, though, if you turn on an evening newscast, you're going to hear a lot about violence in the
right.
city. Particularly, I think, in recently Avondale.
Right.
So how do people wrap their mind around that? You're saying numbers are down, but then we see there's this upswing perhaps in Avondale.
Right. Well, Avondale has had some issues, but crime is down. The numbers are what they are. I think the media oftentimes tries to sensationalize the news and put those ambulance stories on as the lead story. But the reality is that we still have far too many homicides, especially in the black community, not just in Cincinnati, but all over the United States. And that's something that we are looking at. We're definitely trying to help impact that situation. But you don't do that, and you don't impact that like most people think through any uptick in enforcement. You do it, in my opinion, through an uptick of engagement.
Al, you wanted to add something on that?
Yeah, the chief just appointed a new captain, Maris Harold, as the head in Avondale, and she's doing a bang-up job, and she is the face of place-based, problem-oriented policing in Cincinnati. And she just completed a great project at 3522 Redding Road, where that was a magnet for a lot of the crime you're talking about. And she did a wonderful job of engaging the community, using the principles that the chief is talking about, so that the people who were attracting the criminal element are now out of that building. That building is basically crime-free after leading the city in crimes. And it's that kind of community engagement that the chief will bring through the quality of life officers if they remain focused on specific geographical areas and use the data that we've called for in the problem-oriented policing philosophy. So I think he's right. I think we're off to a good start.
So Chief, you mentioned when we were talking about the command staff, you thought you were top-heavy. That's changed a little bit. And also it seems like the command staff now is a little bit more diverse than it was in years past.
I can't speak to what it was before last year. However, you know, I made it a point. Al mentioned the fact that we put Captain Maris Harold in District 4. One of the things I looked at when Captain Gary Lee retired a couple of weeks ago was the fact that in Cincinnati, command positions in patrol are very prestigious positions. And I asked historically, have there ever been two female captains in patrol? And there have not been at one time ever in the city of Cincinnati, in the rich history of this community. So we have two now. We have Captain Bridget Bardua, District 5, and Captain Maris Harold on District 4. They are very talented captains. They are following the problem-oriented policing strategy that Al just spoke of. They get it. They're well-respected. They've earned it, and they are already being difference makers for us.
One of your goals was reducing violence. Another was increased officer visibility.
Right.
What's happened on that front?
It's been going well. I mean, we put our hats back on first and foremost.
Did the officers like
that? Not all of them, no. Chief Craig came in here and did a bad thing when he took those hats away. He really did. And every time I see him, I remind him that this is not Los Angeles. We need hats here. But I believe in professionalism. I believe that you look good, you treat people good, and we have a safe city. And it starts with the details. You know, the devil's in the details. And we brought hats back. We brought the low-voltage blue and red lights on the cruisers back. We cleaned up the package of how the cruisers look. We put more cops on foot, asking them to engage people in their community. Engagement, collaborate, be transparent, be helpful. Be as wide and as deep as you need to be to help people with their situations. And I think good police departments, good police officers are willing to do that. It takes time, and you have to take people away from the radio, and you have to take people away from the mentality that we go from run to run to run, and we pump our brakes, we stop, we get out of our cruiser, we engage people, we get to know what's going on in our communities and how we can impact that for the better.
There has been, when you were talking about run to run to run, I know there's the term code zero when there's a run and there's right. No officer available to respond. I think that's common in District 3.
In District 3 and District 4.
Is that getting better? Or
it is getting better. It's getting better because we've tried to infuse some technology as well. For the first time ever, we have what's called Cop Logic. It gets rolled out next Tuesday. People in Cincinnati will be able to make a report online for those minor crimes that historically they've just called a cruiser to come and take a report, largely for insurance purposes. Now they're able to go online and make that report. We think that's going to free up 20% of the radio runs that we currently have. That's just one thing. The other things are the way we take runs and the way we fix runs. When you problem solve the right way, and I know Al and Iris are going to talk about that, when you do it the right way, you eradicate problems for a whole community sometimes, by just taking the time to fix the problem and not deal with the symptoms.
I know, I think it was the end of June, July of last year, the interim chief made some changes that you were not a fan of. I think there were some alarm drops that you were not responding to. An auto accident, an officer may show up but not take a report, and there was something that was changed on how a case was closed, whether it went to a detective or not. You were not a fan of that, as I recall.
Right.
And so is that basically, if the alarm drop, auto accident, or you're going to get some follow-up on a case?
Absolutely. I think we owe it to the people of Cincinnati, to the people of our community, to be public servants. And those quote-unquote minor crimes that we largely wanted to drop in lieu of being able to respond to the felonious crimes and the high-profile crimes. And then we went from, we shifted left to right to left to right, and all we did was chase the radio. In the meantime, poor old lady has an accident in the middle of the night, and we tell her get out of her car and exchange information. That's not fair. That's not good public service. That's not what Cincinnati PD stands for. So we are now in the business of helping people.
You've made a real point of engaging youth with basketball. I think there's academies. Tell me about those efforts.
Well, I think it starts there. I mean, you talk about crime suppression, you talk about crime prevention, all of those things. It starts with authentic relationships and a culture of respect. Everyone listening knows that there's a disconnect between police and youth and largely police and community in this country. And I think the way you mend those fences is authentically developing relationships with people prior to crisis, prior to name calling, prior to some event where attorneys come out and the media is there. You get to know people. What better way than to start with the young people of Cincinnati, who largely are in impoverished neighborhoods because we've had this demographic inversion, if you will. So now you have a core city that has a lot of kids that have lack and want. Those kids often become victimized because of that socioeconomic situation and the demographic situation that exists in Cincinnati and throughout the nation. So as good police officers, we want to engage those young people and help them through some of those situations, and more importantly and simply, to let them know that they matter to us.
And engaging youth, you did that personally. I think you were at the opening of several Cincinnati public schools on Monday, and I think off the air you're saying you've adopted a couple of schools.
I have adopted a couple of schools. St. Joe Academy, around the corner, Frederick Douglass, and we're going to adopt a school in District 3, probably Dater. And we just love engaging with young people and helping build those relationships with young people in this community.
What about the number of officers? I think there's a new training class that starts. I know that you've told counsel that there's not necessarily a number that you need, but what you've got right now, you feel that you need to add to it.
We need to add to it, and we need to upgrade our technology platform. But right now, we have just short of 1,000. We have a class of 62 that starts next Tuesday, and I'm hearing that the mayor is talking about a class for next year as well, for 2015, which is probably going to be somewhere between 40 and 60. So we're pointing in the right direction to take care of attrition, the natural attrition that we have on our police department. So I hope that we keep that going.
We'll talk about change. And as far as back as I can remember, Cincinnati has had 5 police districts. What's the thought? Is that still adequate? Do those need to be realigned? Do they need to be condensed? What's your thoughts on 5 police districts?
Well, I think we're going to have 5 plus CBS, so really 6. I think we owe it to the people of Cincinnati to continue to look at those boundaries, those districts, and determine whether or not they're effective and efficient. And District 3 by far has more runs than any district in the city. They have about 30% of the workload in the city. District 4 has about 22%. So between those two, they have 50% of all the runs, all the crime, all the situations that we're called to deal with. So we're just looking at the borders to see if we can't make that situation better just by redrawing some configurations.
We've talked about where you've been the last 300-plus days. What's coming up?
Well, a lot's coming up. We have a Major City Chiefs meeting in Orlando next month, and I love those meetings because I get to talk to my peers, Chuck Ramsey from Philadelphia and R.C. White in Denver and David Brown in Dallas and others, Charlie Beck in Los Angeles. But also we're going to have a meeting in a couple of weeks in Chicago. Some of the major city chiefs have been invited by the Police Executive Research Forum to talk about Ferguson, Missouri, talk about what went on there, and talk about what we can do, how we can lend our expertise to some of the smaller agencies, in this case a 53-person department, to help not only heal Ferguson, but to prevent another Ferguson from happening.
We do have a caller. Sarah is on the line from Madisonville. Sarah, go ahead.
Hi. What a great conversation. I just wanted to tell the chief that we in Madisonville were so fortunate and so thankful to work with officers Bill Holthouse and Jen Chilton over the summer as part of the Quality of Life Enhancement Team. And They were so wonderful and worked hand in hand with the community to address quality. And as a result of their work, I am sure that is why Madisonville had such a quiet, peaceful summer. And I am just very thankful and hope that this model throughout the city, because it really did work in Madisonville.
Sarah, we appreciate that call.
Let me second that. I'm a Madisonvillian as well.
Yes, Iris had me at the library a couple of weeks ago in Madisonville. I had a great time, and I was actually able to find my way there on the back roads, and I was really proud of myself. Thank you for the call, and thank you for noticing that a different strategy has been impactful in this community, because it was a little risky to take officers out of what we know as routine patrol and say, we want you to focus on engagement. We want you to focus on the quality of life on your district as told to you by the residents of that district. You know, most cities tell the public what they're going to police and how they're going to police it. That's not problem-oriented policing. Problem-oriented policing starts with your community, and then you collaborate together and come up with solutions, and you measure, and then you write those up. And I know Al is smiling because Dr. Eck put a report out and said, hey, you're doing good, but make sure you give me those summaries so that we know that you're writing up those problem-oriented problems correctly. So our quality of life engagement or enhancement teams have been popular. They are doing the work that I thought that they could do, and all of the districts are better because of them.
We're talking today with Cincinnati Police Chief Jeffrey Blackwell, and coming up after a short break, we're going to shift our discussion to the recent events in Ferguson, Missouri, and how similar events here in Cincinnati in 2001 led to the creation of the Collaborative Agreement. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm talking today with Cincinnati Police Chief Jeffrey Blackwell about his first 300 days on the job and also the recent events in Ferguson, Missouri. Also in the studio are Cincinnati resident Iris Rowley and attorney Al Gerhardstein, who worked on the Cincinnati Collaborative Agreement that came out of the unrest seen here in 2001. You can join our conversation if you have a question or comment, 513-419-7100, or you can email that to talk@wvxu.org. You can also post on Facebook and Twitter, again, 513-419-7100. Well, Al and Iris, thank you for waiting patiently while we were reviewing
the police chief's
anniversary. Iris, let me start with you. You traveled to Ferguson, Missouri, you and Reverend Lynch.
Yeah, I just got back today from Ferguson.
So describe the scene there. What did you see?
In Ferguson, my first visit to Ferguson, I saw total chaos. I saw a lack of leadership from elected officials, lack of transparency from the police. Very similar to what was happening in Cincinnati in 2001. Total disrespect for the African-American community and just a barrage of police, heavy force. I was tear gassed twice, Reverend Lynch and I, first by the county police and then by the National Guard. And there were children, senior citizens, people just out peacefully protesting. But I like to say something, two things. One, people talk about violence, and they talk about the protesters being violent. The violence started when young Michael Brown was shot down in the middle of the street and lie in the street for 4.5 hours, not being covered up, and all those people had to just stomach that and take that in. Psychologically, that does something to you. It hurts you as a parent. It hurts you as a resident. It just hurts you as a friend of Michael Brown. So the violence started there. I want to be clear about that. Subsequently, what you see is people, as you saw in Cincinnati, just sick and tired of being sick and tired of not knowing what to do, how to hold the police accountable, what should they do. When you don't have transparency, when there is a police-involved shooting and every time you hear that it was justified or that you don't get any information at all and that people are just being disrespected, you are for certain creating a recipe for disaster. And so what I saw in Ferguson on my first visit was just a lack of leadership, and it was very, very disappointing.
With the situation here in Cincinnati, I mean, both situations in Ferguson and Cincinnati in 2001, it was the shootings of unarmed teenagers. But in Cincinnati, I know there had been several officer-involved incidents up to that point. Do you know what the situation is in Ferguson? Is it the same sort of issue there, or was this a one a one-time deal.
And speaking to residents, in 2014, I believe that young Michael Brown was the first police-involved shooting there. But there have been many other instances, and that just goes to show to the frustration and the anguish that people are feeling, and just a total disrespect. So that's what was happening. In Cincinnati, we counted, I believe it was 15 in a five-and-a-half-year period. We were at 15. And so with the community's blessing, we decided that we would laser focus. Black United Front started out with the restaurants closing during Jazz Festival. I think it was 13 of them that decided to close during the Jazz Festival weekend, which was very egregious to African Americans who, you know, the Jazz Festival brought in tons of money, which is now the Macy's Music Festival. All those restaurants got some type of tax incentive to build in or out of their restaurants. So it was another disrespect to the Black community.
What was your message? What did you tell the folks in Ferguson? I guess you've now been there twice.
Mm-hmm.
So what was your message to those folks?
Well, the message, one, first, is just to listen and to see what people are. People are hurting. People are angry. People are mad. And so to offer a blueprint to move forward. We have a document, our collaborative agreement, along with a binding agreement with the Department of Justice and the City of Cincinnati that can offer Ferguson citizens and the people of Ferguson and even St. Louis and the county and those surrounding cities that surround Ferguson a blueprint of moving forward and building on something so that they don't have to stay in that chaotic mode. And that was the conversation that we had. I travel with all of these newspaper clippings of Cincinnati in 2001 to show Ferguson that Cincinnati was Ferguson in 2001. And we've come some ways, and we've come that ways together. It wasn't easy. Change isn't easy. Sacrifice isn't easy, but they can do it too. And they were very receptive of what we've done in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Al, let me turn to you. What do you make of the events in Ferguson?
Well, I think Iris has accurately relayed what the problem is. And what we're trying to do is offer some concrete ideas for going forward in a positive way. One of the things that will happen, as already happened in Ferguson, is that folks are being told, well, let's study it. Let's have a conference. Let's have a blue ribbon panel. Let's have a commission. And that'll result in another three-ring binder with a bunch of paper in it with lots of recommendations that come out after all the heat is gone and after all the interest is gone. And then it can go on a shelf safely so that the status quo isn't disturbed. And we're there as a testament to don't let that happen. We are all about you can do better. If you're going to have a conversation, don't waste your words. Make that conversation get focused on some type of enforceable agreement where people who make pledges are held to them.
That's right.
And those pledges have to really get at the systemic causes of lack of accountability, disproportionate impact on the Black community, violence that isn't properly addressed, and communities that feel occupied rather than supported by the police. And we addressed all of that in the collaborative. And while the exact terms of any type of agreement may be unique to Ferguson and should address their concerns that we'd elicit by listening, the bottom line is they shouldn't let up until there is some type of enforceable agreement so that they can go forward positively. And we think we can be helpful with that. So we'll see what happens.
Iris?
Yeah, I agree with Al. And, you know, let me say this, too. You know, this has been a long journey in crafting this agreement, working, encouraging communities who have had a huge amount of distrust in police to begin to work with police. Some of the things that Chief Blackwell talks about with quality of life officers and Captain Maris Harrell working the community problem-oriented policing piece and problem-solving, working with communities. It's not easy to do that when you've mistrust and you just had no regard for police at all. So to see all of that turn around is really priceless, and I don't think we talk about that enough. And I want to thank the chief, and I do it on Black Talk Radio, so I want to do it on this radio station and say thank you,
thank you
for coming to Cincinnati and opening your arms and wrapping it around what we have here. We have done a great amount of work and we want to continue to build. So I think, as Al said, Ferguson and any other city in this country can learn from what we've done.
Al, what made the difference in 2001? You said not enough. Cincinnati has a history of writing reports, putting them in a binder and setting them on a shelf. There are lots of neighborhoods that say they have plans that are gathering dust.
That's right.
At City Hall.
We're good at that.
What was different in 2001, 2002 that there wasn't a blue ribbon commission, there wasn't a panel who wrote a report, and it went nowhere?
The difference was people like Iris, people like Reverend Lynch, people like Herb Brown, people that had been through all those blue ribbon panels. And then when Timothy Thomas gets shot, when we have a case already filed asking for a different path, we decided that we wouldn't do it. There was just a number of people who had been down the blue ribbon panel version who said, all right, we're not going to do that again. It doesn't work. It's disrespectful. It denies dignity to the community. So by standing up and saying no and demanding a different path, we got there. And here's where we get to a notch up. When we negotiated that agreement, and we had in it this commitment to problem-oriented policing, which is data-driven, which is mining those service calls for repeat location, repeat victim, repeat perpetrator, and then figuring out how to get to the bottom of it. That's really hard and tedious work. Mm-hmm. And we didn't do that very well. That's why we needed a sixth year to even implement the agreement, because we still hadn't gotten to the problem-oriented policing. All we were doing was enforcing those terms of the agreement that said the police won't beat people up anymore. And that's a pretty low bar. So what we wanted was true community engagement. And that comes from having the community work with officers around a defined problem. We're starting to get there with this quality of life team. We can't just have feel-good meetings. We need to have gatherings that are focused on a defined problem and then go through that SARA process to really resolve it so that, like on Reading Road, that building's just cleaned up. And we need to do that over and over and over again. Then Cincinnati will be the best policing city in the country. And we're really starting down that path. And only now we're trying to figure out how to communicate that style of policing to the community. And Iris and I have been working on that for years. But, you know, we have a lot of residents who think, I'll just call 911 and my problem will go away. And our type of policing says, no, you really need to stay engaged.
Chief Blackwell, I don't want to leave you out of the conversation.
That's
obviously,
okay. I'm enjoying this in, dialogue.
In 2001, you were in Columbus.
Right.
In Columbus in 2001, looking down at Cincinnati, what were your thoughts?
I knew a few of the officers that are still on, actually. And I called them, and I remember one of them in particular I was pretty good friends with. And I just said, what the heck is going on down 71? What are you guys doing? I had followed it. I had always been a officer in tune with peace and transparency and real connectedness, because I grew up in the inner city. I grew up in a single-parent home, and I think most people know my story. And I've seen police abuse of authority firsthand. I know what it looks like. I know what it smells like and tastes like and feels like and all of that. And I don't want to be a part of an organization that does that to its people. And so coming here after being in Columbus for all those years, I knew the challenge that was there to hold, not just hold, let me back up, not hold what Al and Iris and others have done, but to actually make it better, to make Cincinnati better, to make us, because we believe in the collaborative, we truly do, and we believe in transparency and truth-telling and being upfront and opening our entire department for review on any level by anybody at any time. And I want to make that continue to go and continue to grow, you know, because the bottom line is empathy without strategy and diligence means nothing. So Ferguson needs to get going now and to strategically start to heal and put, like what Al said, into place. Don't sit around and talk about it and plan to have another meeting and have a meeting to have another meeting. The blueprint's been written here. It's been written in other communities. And they need. There's a sense of urgency that they should have to heal quickly and to get on the right track.
A couple of days after the events in Ferguson started to unfold, I believe you were on at least one national show, perhaps CNN.
Yes.
And you said that you would have done things differently. What would have been different?
Transparency from the beginning. I think people deserve that. I think your community deserves for the chief to be transparent from the beginning and hold people accountable. Now, I'm not saying in this case or in any other case that the department or the officers have done anything wrong. But what I am suggesting is by not telling the truth in an expedited fashion, by not opening up and saying what what we know at the time, preliminarily, I think they did an injustice not only to Ferguson but to the entire nation.
And not just Chief Blackwell, but Chief Stryker was on CNN as well. I don't know if you caught that, but Chief Stryker called me while I was in Ferguson, and he said on national television that Ferguson was getting it wrong, as did Cincinnati in the beginning. And Al knows there were, you know, it was a while before we could get to the point where we could actually sit down and talk about what we had written. And so Stryker said that to the world, that Ferguson was getting it wrong, as did Cincinnati. And he was glad that Cincinnati finally got it right, and that we are continuing to build on what we've got.
And actually, in Cincinnati, I mean, that was the thing here, too, that was a 180-degree shift after the 2001 incident. You had the chief of police pretty soon after any incident at least giving a brief update on what was going on, and then a full press conference, usually within 24 hours, with as much detail as they could provide.
That's right, and that still holds true today. When there's an officer-involved incident, there's a whole bunch of us that get an email immediately from the city manager or from the chief, and we're all involved in knowing what they know at that point. And then within 24 hours, there's usually a press conference that says, here's what we know, here's what we don't know. That's great. And that doesn't mean that this isn't going to court. Doesn't mean I won't sue them. It doesn't mean that right. There won't be more TV. It just means that we're all in this together and we'll work through it. And that's a breath of fresh air.
And it doesn't mean that it won't get a phone call from community screaming and shouting either. And I want to say this, too, because people often say this when you're trying to change a culture of policing, that you don't like police. And that's not true. It's simply not true. As a taxpayer, you have to be engaged in what's going on in your town. I think it's just simply wrong for people to say that.
Chief, have you heard from anyone in Ferguson? Has anyone in Ferguson reached out personally to you?
I have had a couple of phone calls, and I do plan on probably visiting next week sometime to offer whatever they feel I can offer to the policing platform and the strategic shift that needs to occur there. I'm more than willing to do whatever I can to help.
We are talking about the recent events in Ferguson, Missouri, following the unrest there and similar events here in 2001 that led to the collaborative agreement that changed policing in the city. And we're going to continue that conversation in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman. Howard Wilkinson is off today. We're talking today about the unrest in Ferguson, Missouri, and how those events somewhat mirror what happened here in 2001 and the creation of the collaborative agreement in 2002. My guests are Cincinnati Police Chief Jeffrey Blackwell, City Resident Iris Rowley, and Attorney Al Gerhardstein. Again, you can join our conversation 513-419-7100 or email to talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. In just a second, I want to kind of drill down into the collaborative agreement. But does the constant news hype around these events help or hurt? I mean, clearly Ferguson has been CNN, I think Iris has been on CNN, you've been on, Chief Blackwell's been on CNN. Al, I don't know if you've made the national, if you've had a national interview yet or not, but does that help or hurt? And I know in 2001, as a local reporter, we kind of got bombarded and stepped on by the national reporters, but, you know, they were here for 3, 4, 5 days and then they left. Mm-hmm. So does the attention, does it help or hurt?
Well, if you're asking someone who was trying to get change, it helped. Of course, people don't want the negative to show, but it helped the people who are elected to run the city determine that they needed to help us make some change. And so I think it helped in that instance. And it helped to identify what was going on, not just in Cincinnati, but across the country. And it's still going on today. We're Beaver Creek and in Georgia. Things are happening all over, and it's really alarming. So I think we were doing something really well in 2001. Oftentimes, I think we were ahead of the game and had people stepped up to the plate with us to say, let's look at what we have in our police department, and maybe we need to enhance it. Things could be a lot different.
Ultimately, all these things are about public education and turning the public mind away from a passive notion of policing to engagement. And if you can take a crisis like this and turn the news coverage from the horse race style coverage, well, now the protesters are winning, and now there's 14 canisters, and there's six, you know, high-powered weapons, and take it away from that sort of competitive counting coverage to covering the dialogue, listening to the stories, seeing how people will really start to challenge themselves and their notions. That's a great use of the press. And I'm hoping that we're turning that corner and we'll be doing that in Ferguson.
G. Blackwell?
I agree. I think when you shine the light, it exposes all of the things that need work. And, you know, I had a conversation with Al Sharpton a couple of months ago in New York City, and he just gave me a little simple piece of advice. He said, if the folks of Cincinnati call me when there's a crisis, that means they don't know you. And so I took that very seriously, and I told Brother Al that they know me here because they see me in the community. I'm there. I'm part of the fabric of Cincinnati now. And so I think people trust me, and they trust that I'm going to tell the truth. That doesn't mean I'm going to always agree with the Al Gerhardsteins when he says that maybe a cop did something wrong. You know, we don't always get it right, but sometimes they don't always get it right either. And the policy and the procedure that we followed may not be popular, but it may be by the book. It may have been what was needed to do. So I need to put that out there, that I'm not judging the officer in Ferguson. I don't know. I don't have the facts, and that's part of the problem. None of us have the facts.
Chief, let me ask you something else that's got quite a bit of attention, is this heavy military equipment that the police sometimes roll out. We joked on this program last week that sometimes when Silese went through a parade, it looked like a Mayday parade in the former Soviet Union. So where do you stand on that? And I'm assuming you have some of that stuff.
Well, we don't here. I was part of the program in my former city. And I think there is a need for some of that military surplus in the larger metropolitan areas of this nation that have homeland security interests that play out daily. I don't think there's a need in those small communities like Ferguson and other small communities throughout the nation to have armored personnel carriers and tanks and rifles and helmets and helicopters and all of that stuff. It's free, and you get these small town chiefs and sheriffs that say, well, if it's free, we'll make it work. I even heard a sheriff recently who I know personally and respect, but he said, you know, our armored personnel carrier is a big deterrent to crime. And I just shook my head and said, if you want a tank to be a deterrent, you're not engaged in the right type of policing.
I had a case recently against a small community, Lima, up on 75. It's only got, 30,000 people. In part of the discovery in that case, we learned that there was one SWAT raid a week in that small town. Every drug arrest, many of which were people that they had set up through a drug task force, was done with the SWAT team. And, of course, the case I was involved in, the SWAT team had shot a woman holding a baby and killed her. So, you know, you get into that kind of policing where everybody's the enemy until they prove otherwise, and you're going to get it wrong. And you're going to get a lot of people really upset.
Mm-hmm. Let's switch back to the collaborative agreement. At its heart, what did it do, the collaborative agreement?
At its heart, it really established accountability so that we now have a professional Cincinnati, you know, civilian complaint authority with its own staff, subpoena power. The reports come out before the officer's disciplined. We have an early warning system, so the officers are watched as they go through their daily lives as police officers. And we have a robust internal affairs so that all these places, all these institutions are in place for accountability. We also reformed use of force. We got cameras in the cruisers. We got really good policies. We instituted tasers. We had to work on the taser policy after it came in. But we shot fewer people, and that was very, very important. And then we had a very strong program on bias-free policing so that the officers are watched in terms of the race of the people they're stopping, and then the outliers are confronted and said, all right, everybody else who works this beat averages this proportion of black people being stopped. You're way over here. What's up? And so we're addressing that as responsibly as we can. And then the most important thing was problem-oriented policing. So, and that's how we engage the community. That's how we use our data to really deploy the police effectively so that rather than doing sweeps in the black community where we piss off a whole bunch of people who have got no crimes going on, but we're stopping them. We're able to tell the people in the black community, ma'am, I'm here because your building has had 16 runs in the last 2 weeks. That makes sense.
So at the heart of it, you asked the heart of it. And here's something that we don't think about. It made us think. It made us think outside of the box of how to do this differently and how to do it collaboratively, how to do it with people who didn't trust the police, who didn't want to work with the police. And you see a difference in that now. So I think it made us think about things. It made us look at things. And it actually makes us look a whole lot better as it relates to policing, in particular in the black community.
We are talking today about the unrest in Ferguson, Missouri, and also the similar events here in Cincinnati in 2001 and the collaborative agreement that resulted from that in 2002. 513-419-7100 if you have a question. Chief, when you came here, did you have some sort of briefing on the collaborative agreement before you started so you knew this is here and this is what it means and this is what you have to do?
Well, I knew that it was a part of the fabric of this community. So as I went through the process, the hiring process here, I reached out on my own to find a copy and study it. And I'm glad I did, because in the process to get the position as chief, there were many questions about the collaborative and what the heart of it is that Al and Iris just spoke of. And I was able to effectively, not having been here, talk about the collaborative and what it means to me. What it meant to me to be able to talk about it intelligently and to assure the selection committee that I shared the same values that were that came out as a result of the collaborative agreement.
How would this have worked without Judge Bilott's involvement? I think there were several times when you were, I can remember as comfortable it was laying on the marble floor at the federal courthouse at midnight, and I think people wanted to leave, and she said, no, you're going to stay put and keep working on this.
Right. She was a very instrumental, not only in bringing that agreement to the end where we could all sign off on it, but also in enforcing it. And that's why I say to the people of Ferguson, don't go down this road unless you get an enforceable agreement, because this is hard work, and people who are in office are not going to want to give up their ability to manage the whole problem easily. And yet you really need a neutral. Somebody with a lifetime appointment's very useful to a situation like this. And Magistrate Mers was very helpful, as was the whole monitoring team. So that was all critical stuff.
And you know, I like to think, we often talk about all the professionals that were involved, but the 3,500 citizens that actually voted on the goals of the collaborative, that took guts. It took time and it took guts to actually step up and say, hey, we're going to do this and let's be engaged and do it. You know, our largest group was the youth group. It was over 1,000, I do believe, Al, that participated in this process. And so this is something that we definitely should look back on, have it institutionalized, and definitely take it where people who need it can use it and see it as a tool for their community as well.
Was there ever a point after this was signed that you thought this isn't going to work? I remember I was at a press conference where I think the FOP wanted to withdraw from the collaborative, and I think I'm going to get this quote right from the FOP president at the time. His quote was, we're the bastard stepchild of this whole agreement, and we're not going to take it anymore.
Yeah, there were challenging days. The Black United Front withdrew one point. The FOP wanted to withdraw. I filed a motion, and the city was held in contempt. I thought that Stryker should go to jail. Yeah, all that stuff happened because people were passionate, people were fighting. People were afraid of what we had signed, but we had an enforceable agreement. We had a 5-year term. We stuck through it, and we're better for having finally settled down and implementing it the way it was intended. But I feel like, it was 5 years before we were really in a groove getting to the implementation. In the middle of all that, Cy Lee sued us too, He didn't want to have the collaborative control the area around the courthouse.
Right.
I mean, yes, we had plenty of bumps.
With, I believe, one of the things that was set up in the collaborative was this citizen's complaint authority. So if somebody felt that they had been done wrong by the police, they could file a complaint. And they were pretty busy at the start. And I think from what I'm hearing now, there are relatively few complaints that go to the CCA.
There are fewer complaints than there were at the beginning. I think they are well investigated. And I think it's a combination. I think there are fewer problems with the police, but I also think that they're a little too quiet.
I think they need
to be out in the community. I think their presence needs to be advertised and promoted a little bit more, and we just haven't done it.
And their budget has gotten cut over the years as well. So they're operating with fewer investigators. And so I agree with you, Al. I don't think that they're tooting their own horn, and the city certainly isn't tooting that horn either. So people, I think, you know, after a while, you start to go to sleep. And again, here are the things that we look back and you ask us about lessons. The Citizens Complaint Authority is a huge lesson. I think there should have been more emphasis put around it, a bigger commitment to make sure that people know about it, and just making sure that we all agree to keep its name out there and keep it relevant to the people.
One really important issue there is that we don't want to promote just complaints. Citizens Complaint Authority has the power to look at policies and patterns, too, and it was that authority that allowed them to lead the effort to change the TASER policy, and that was great, and I think people need to know about
and
that.
And that's something people in Ferguson ask about. So, Chief, when you go, know that they're going to talk to you about the Citizens Complaint Authority. That's the biggest thing that people want. They want some type of citizens review, some type of oversight over the police, and just some type of process. So they were happy that we had it.
And just before we run out of time here, Al, we talk a lot about the collaborative agreement, but there was also a memorandum of understanding with the Justice Department. How critical of a piece was that together with the collaborative? Could you have done the collaborative without the DOJ part?
Not as well. I mean, the DOJ is excellent at all the technical policing stuff, and they are great auditors of all the paperwork that that officers file in a use of force situation. We really benefited from all of that. What was really helpful to us is that they allowed us to incorporate their whole agreement into ours. So we didn't have to go through six layers of approval to enforce their agreement. We just went to court. And that made us much more nimble than the current DOJ agreements that are out there now. And I think it worked pretty well.
We had the best attorneys in the world, by the way.
Don't know about that.
As we begin to wrap up here, we talk about the successes of the collaborative agreement and the memorandum of understanding with the Department of Justice. Is there maybe something that still needs work, maybe from 2001, here we are, 12 years later, 2002 was when the collaborative was signed, that, yeah, we still need to do a little bit more, we're not there yet on this part?
My vote is community engagement. The thing that we're most proud of is also the thing that we're weakest on. We spent $5 million setting up the partnering center, and we never really succeeded in making the collaborative and problem-solving a household word throughout Cincinnati. And we just didn't know how to do it very well. We tried different strategies. We tried different mission statements. We still aren't there yet. We have a lot more to do to figure out how to make sure people know that this is a new day on policing.
Iris, in 10 or 15 seconds.
I agree with Al, and I would just be mindful that we need to give things time. Change takes time. And so what Al just talked about, the problem-solving piece and not making it a household name, that is absolutely true. So I agree wholeheartedly.
And, Chief, I'll give you the final word here in 15 or 20 seconds on what needs to improve.
Well, the reality that cops are human too, but we have to be the best of humankind. And I think we have a great situation in Cincinnati. It should be modeled by every major city and even the small cities in the United States. We get it, we do it right, and it's important that we maintain adherence to the collaborative, the spirit of it and the letter of it, and continue everything that was put forth in 2001.
We've been talking with Cincinnati Police Chief Jeffrey Blackwell about his leadership of the department and also the recent events in Ferguson, Missouri, and a similar event that happened here in Cincinnati in 2001 that led to the collaborative agreement with the Cincinnati resident Iris Rowley and attorney Al Gerhardstein. Thank you all for being here this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available on our website, WVXU.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our technical director was Bruce Ellis. Here and Now is coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Jay Hanselman.